Merry Christmas Eve and welcome back to another installment of It's About Time. It's a DC Sports podcast. It is Christmas Eve, at least for a little while longer. The gifts are under the tree. The kids are asleep. All is well in my house. Nothing, a little urgent care visit for my son. Threw a little bit of a monkey wrench into our Christmas Eve plans, but he's okay. He's all good. And we are moving right along. Christmas morning cannot come soon enough for my kids. They are excited as can be. Meanwhile, I'm here to talk about DC sports. And some positive, there's some negative. The DJ Swearinger thing went down today. I've got a take on that that's probably unpopular. So we'll probably start with that. The Redskins did lose on Saturday to the Titans, 25-16. And then where do we go from here? Sunday's game against Philly was moved to 425. Where do we go from here with the Redskins, their roster, their coaching staff? We're going to touch on that a little bit. And then next week when Josh is back, we're going to do a complete recap of the season, complete look ahead for the Redskins. What do they do with their coaching staff? Kind of a 360 view of the Redskins and what we think they're going to do. And to be honest, by the time we record the podcast, they might have already made some decisions coaching-wise. But we'll see what happens. We're also going to talk about the Nats a little bit. They made a signing this week. They signed their fourth starter, Annabelle Sanchez. Daniel Murphy signed with the Rockies. Dodgers making some moves. Do we think that the Nats are done, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll talk a little bit about baseball at the end. But it's going to be a football-heavy podcast, a lot going on with the Redskins, as their season pretty much came to an end on Saturday. Before we jump in, I will say that we are affiliated with the DMVSportsNetwork.com. It is an up-and-coming DC Sports website. They have a lot of written material on all things DC Sports, whether it's collegiate stuff or also professional, not just the four majors. I mean, you're talking UFC or any MMA stuff. You're talking really any sport that you can think of, tennis, etc. They're going to cover it. They also have a lot of podcasts that they're either affiliated with or that they put on themselves. There's Hogs Haven, which is a Redskins podcast. They've got a Nationals podcast coming out. They had a fantasy football podcast, which is pretty much done now because the season's almost over. But a lot of great stuff going on. Check them out, dmvsportsnetwork.com. You can also check them out on Twitter, at @DMV_SN. You can also follow us on Twitter. It's About Time, DC1. That's ITS. About Time, DC1. Follow us on Twitter. Subscribe to our podcast. Rate us. Let us know what you think. Shoot us an email. Whatever you feel good about. We'd always love to hear from you guys. So let's get started on the Redskins. I'm going to open up with DJ Swearinger. He was cut today, released today. Jay Gruden called him into his office and released him. And for those of you that don't know, Saturday after the game, DJ had some pretty harsh words for Greg Minuski, the defensive play calling. He mainly said, "We should have been more aggressive. We were successful. We had our eyes faced towards the quarterback." This is all paraphrasing. I don't have the exact quotes in front of me. But he threw his coaching staff, defensive coaching staff, under the bus and basically blamed them for the loss against Tennessee. And I know it's an unpopular opinion, but I'm just going to go out and I'm going to lead with this. DJ Swearinger left Jay Gruden no choice. This isn't the first time that DJ has spoken up, whether it's about the coaching staff, about the scheme, about effort. He spent the entire season doing it. And after a game where the Redskins, they played their guts out. They played their guts out. They were decimated by injury. It was a game, and they were 11-point underdogs going into the game. Nobody really expected them to win or to even be competitive. And they were ahead going into the fourth quarter, and obviously it didn't pan out for them. They were up 13-9, ended up losing 25-16. But he really torpedoed the whole effort by trashing Minuski. Was he accurate by saying it? Probably. I think the Redskins did stray away from what they were successful with in the first three quarters of the game, which was putting pressure on the quarterback, rushing six or seven, playing a zone behind it. I think they probably did shy away from that and play a little bit more conservative, especially in the last drive for Tennessee that led to the go-ahead touchdown. But should he have shown restraint? Absolutely. You can't do that in the public eye. You just can't. And DJ's done it enough this year where Jay Gruden rightfully said, I've had enough. Now look, DJ is a fine player, and this year he was a Pro Bowl alternate. He was a player that the Skins front office could look at and say, you know, he's a building block for 2019 and possibly beyond. He had 1 year left on his deal after this one. And now, yes, the Skins have to add two new safeties because Monte Nicholson has off-the-field issues and HaHa Clinton Dix is going to be a free agent and probably won't be re-signed. So you have to add two new safeties to their numerous holes. But the bottom line is the Skins just could not keep him. It was an untenable situation. His comments not only disrespected Greg Minuski, but they also disrespected Jay Gruden. They disrespected the authority that Gruden had. Now, many people, and I'm going to throw a celebrity in there, Dale Earnhardt Jr. included, they're comparing this and saying, "What, you keep Mason Foster, you sign Reuben Foster, but you get rid of DJ Swearinger. None of this makes sense." This situation is different than those, and here's why. Reuben Foster and Mason Foster did not undermine or disrespect the Redskins coaching staff. Let's start with Reuben. He's had off-field issues the entire time when he was with the San Francisco 49ers. To be honest, in my opinion, the Redskins really should have never signed him. It was a terrible PR move. He may see the field next year. He may not. I don't really think he's the type of person that you want in your locker room, but that was a decision made by Bruce Allen. Point being, though, his situation are completely off the field. They have nothing to do with how he handles his teammates, how he handles his coaching staff, or how he handles himself in the media. He has yet to disrespect the 49ers coaching staff or the Redskins coaching staff. Mason Foster's comments were private and they were on Instagram. To add an additional layer to that situation, he also said it was his cousin who was running the profile and it was his cousin who was speaking for him. Mason apologized, and this was a first offense for him. But at the same time, DJ did it with a camera and microphones in front of him, and he did it knowing that everybody would hear it. Mason Foster's comments, whether Mason made them or not, were private. It was a private conversation. They got published. He should have been smarter, sure. But they're different than the DJ Swearinger thing, and the Reuben Foster thing is completely off-the-field stuff. Now, I don't think they should have signed Reuben Foster, but DJ Swearinger, he dug this own hole for himself. Dug it all for himself. A positive for me, a takeaway that I'll take away from this situation, in no way does Jay Gruden do this without the approval from at least Bruce Allen and probably Dan Snyder. This tells me that Jay's job might be safe. There's no way that Bruce Allen and Dan Snyder let Jay Gruden release one of their best defensive players going into the offseason if Jay isn't potentially the coach here next year. Greg Minuski's most likely gone at the end of the year. I mean, that's probably a foregone conclusion given the complete and total collapse of the defense in the second half of the season. That, however, does not make DJ Swearinger's comments about him any more acceptable. Jay has to protect his coaching staff, not just for now, but also for the future. He has to make it known that in the future, any discord has to be handled internally. Those things have to be handled in-house. They cannot be made public. And a final thought really about DJ is that the Redskins were his fourth team in six seasons. If he signs with a team for a playoff run for the final week of the season and into the playoffs, that's his fifth team in his sixth NFL season. That's not a mistake, guys. I mean, this is for a guy who was a Pro Bowl alternate this year and is widely considered to be one of the better safeties in the National Football League, yet every team he's been on has decided to part ways with him for one reason or another. This is a pattern of behavior for him, and to be honest, Jay had just had enough. Jay has dealt with enough this season when it comes to injuries. He didn't ask for the Reuben Foster signing. That was forced upon him. The Mason Foster situation. Jay just, I think he was at his wit's end, and he finally decided, I have to do this. I don't think it was grandstanding by Jay, nor do I think it was really an overreaction. I really believe that DJ left him no other option. Jay had to maintain his authority in the locker room, and Dan and Bruce letting him do it tells me he might be here longer than another week, which, to be honest, makes me pretty happy. So, to me, the DJ thing, I mean, it's a distraction. There's only 1 week left in the Redskins season. The Redskins, to me, are always a circus. This is another circusy move, but it was a move that had to be made. If Jay had let DJ stay on, it would have neutered his authority in the locker room. People would have thought, well, if DJ can do that, I'm going to do whatever the hell I want to. So to me, it was not a not an overreaction. It was something that Jay had to do. Let's talk about the actual game. The Redskins lost 25-16 to the Titans Saturday night. I got to be honest, I'm going to lead with this. Team played their guts out. Played their absolute guts out. I mean, you're talking about you're on your fourth quarterback, you're on your umpteenth combination of offensive linemen, you're one of your starting guards for the game goes down, you bring in your 12th guard of the season. They played their guts out. Josh Johnson, in my opinion, has probably earned himself a shot to at least compete for the backup position next year, if not maybe the starting position, depending on what the Redskins do in the offseason at the starting quarterback position. His numbers won't wow you. He was 13 of 23 for 153 yards. He had a touchdown, had two interceptions. Now, the two interceptions came on back-to-back drives to end the game. But I think he made plays all night. He had four carries for 22 yards. I think he did just enough to win the football game. And let's not forget the weapons that he was throwing to. If you look at it, Jamison Crowder, five catches, 78 yards. I mean, clearly it's great to have Crowder back. I think that he's fully healthy finally. Daxon, three catches for 30 yards. And then his starting tight end was Jeremy Sprinkle because Verna Davis didn't play. Two catches, 22 yards. Beyond that, he really had nobody to throw to. But he did have a running game. Adrian Peterson, 26 carries, 119 yards. AP, in my opinion, has earned himself a roster spot here next year. A, if he wants to come back, I think they should bring him back. I think they should bring him back next year to work with Darius Geis. I think that AP would really thrive, 10 to 15 carries a game, kind of split the load with Darius Geis. I think that would be amazing for the Redskins, kind of have a two-headed monster, and then you still have Chris Thompson as your third down back. You keep AP and Geis fresh. Geis is going to be coming off a knee injury. I don't see any problem with that. And to be honest, I mean, AP's had a great year. I don't know how many teams are still going to be interested in him. I think that the Redskins could probably get him pretty cheaply for another year. It's clear that he's made an impact on this team, and it's clear that he still has gas in the tank. I would love to see him back with the Redskins next year, and I don't think that there's any denying that Darius Geis could learn quite a bit from playing with and playing in front of Adrian Peterson. I'm going to continue to talk a little bit. To me, Jay Gruden deserves a lot of credit. And I know we're not talking about participation trophies. We're not talking about just effort. But let's really, really look at it. I mean, for the last 2 weeks, the effort that this team has given, after being just really blown out and embarrassed at home by the Giants 2 weeks ago, the team is decimated by injury, and they have really come to play the last 2 weeks. This week, the loss to the Titans, to me, they weren't outcoached. It was really because they just didn't have the weapons to compete. They gutted it out for three quarters. They had a lead going into the fourth quarter. And maybe DJ Swearinger is right. Maybe the defense could have been more aggressive in the second half, especially in the fourth quarter. But in my opinion, they did everything that they could with the pieces that they had. And to be honest, the Titans just eventually cracked through. The Titans opened the game with a really nice drive. Derrick Henry, by the way, finishes the game, 21 carries, 84 yards. Nothing stellar, but good enough, you know, 4 yards a carry, good enough to win the football game, but nothing like he's done the last two games. But the Titans opened up the game with a drive that really made you think, okay, we're going to be in a bit of trouble. They go 11 plays, 69 yards in 6.5 minutes, and they score a touchdown. But after that, for the next, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Next five drives, they force 3 punts and 2 field goals, the Redskins defense. It's pretty solid. Can't complain about that. And let's also talk about the Redskins dominating the time of possession in this game, especially their third drive, which started with 26 seconds left in the first quarter and went 10 minutes, 58 seconds, goes 93 yards in 17 plays and results in a touchdown. That is probably the best drive of the Redskins' season. And let's not forget that the Redskins had it 2nd and 27 from their own 2-yard line. Adrian Peterson gives them some breathing room with a 13-yard run up the gut. And then on 3rd and 14, Josh Johnson makes a little bit of room with his legs and completes a pass in the middle of the field to Josh Doctson for 22 yards. And that spurs the rest of the drive, and then they end up, Josh Johnson completes a pass to Michael Floyd for 7 yards and a touchdown. Probably one of the, if not the best, one of the best drives of their season. 10 minutes, 58 seconds. That was impressive. And the Redskins offense did their part to keep Tennessee off the field. Tennessee only had one drive in the second quarter. Now it was 13 plays, 4 minutes and 28 seconds, ending in a field goal. But they only had 3 drives in the first half. That shows how dominant the Redskins were time of possession. The Redskins deserve a lot of credit. They really do. And so does Jay Gruden. And in my opinion, if I got to talk about this, and we talked about this last week with Josh, but in my opinion, Jay Gruden has done enough to keep his job. Everybody wants to talk about, oh, they're a 500 team, they're a 500 team. Fine, they're a 500 team. But let me tell you something. Based on the roster that they've had, the injuries that they've dealt with, Jay's done a pretty decent job. And again, I've said this 2 weeks in a row, I don't think that there are any options out there that are better than Jay Gruden. And I think he's earned himself the right to play another, to coach another season. I do think Greg Minuski's gone. I think that they're going to have to bring in a strong-minded defensive coordinator. I think you're going to have some options. I think Todd Bowles is going to be gone with the Jets. It's possible that Steve Wilks with Arizona is going to be gone. I think you have the opportunity to pick up a pretty strong defensive mind. I think that the Redskins should be very aggressive in that part. I have no problem with the idea that they have two head coaches, essentially. I mean, Jay's the head coach, but you basically have an offensive head coach and a defensive head coach. That's how Joe Gibbs handled it in his first go-around. With Richie Pettibone, Joe Gibbs had no oversight over the defense whatsoever. I mean, he's famously known as saying his insight or his contribution to the defense was going down to Richie Pettibone and saying, please stop them. That's pretty much all he could do. Joe Gibbs was an offensive-minded coach. Jay's the same way. Let's get him a strong-minded defensive coordinator who can just take over the whole defense. They have great building blocks. Last piece about this game that I want to talk about is I really, what the hell was going on with Josh Norman at the end of the game? He was being taunted by a Titans offensive lineman. I didn't write down the guy's name. I don't really care. The guy basically said, get the hell off of our field, and then was mocking Josh Norman, with the bow and arrow that Norman likes to do. Norman got in his face, threw his helmet at him. And then he was also apparently, when everybody had already been showered up, they were heading to the buses, Norman was still in full pads, hadn't even undressed yet. He was the last person to undress in the locker room. I'd really like to know what was going on through his head. It's an interesting thing. I wonder if he thinks he won't be back here next year. I mean, he'll certainly play football next year. A team will sign him. But I wonder, I mean, it's nice to see that somebody's that passionate and is that upset about losing a football game. But I wonder, was it genuine? Was he genuinely that upset, or was he just putting on a show? I found that to be very interesting. I don't really understand it. But maybe he was just distraught that the season was over. Again, they started 6-3. They were first place in the NFC East by a game and a half. And then since then, things have pretty much fallen off. They've gone 1-5. And they have been eliminated from the playoff race going into Week 17. Going into Week 17, Sunday's game against Philadelphia has been moved to 4:25. That is for Philadelphia. That is not for Washington. It's a simple situation for Philly because Dallas has clinched the NFC East. For Philly, if the Vikings lose and Philly wins, they're in the playoffs. Otherwise, it's over for them. There is a part of me that wants Philadelphia to win and for the Vikings to lose so Kirk Cousins doesn't make it into the playoffs. That's because I'm petty and vindictive. I'm not going to lie. I don't want to see him in the playoffs, but odds are he probably will make it into the playoffs. I don't think the Bears are going to be playing for much. The Bears play the Vikings on Sunday. So that'll be interesting to see. And I will say this. The only thing I'm going to say about this game against Philly, because it's meaningless for the Redskins. If the Redskins play Colt McCoy over Josh Johnson, I'm going to be very upset. To me, Josh Johnson has earned the right to finish the season. He's earned the right to be in training camp next year fighting for a roster spot. Nothing against Colt McCoy. There's nothing to gain by putting Colt McCoy in there on Sunday. A, he's coming off of a fracture of his leg. And B, we know what he can do in this offense. He's been in the offense for, what, 4 or 5 years. Let's see what Josh Johnson can do. Josh Johnson has earned the right. I'd like to see him starting. I also heard that Samaje Perine might be getting a lot of carries this weekend, or at least some carries, just to see what they have. I've got no problem with that. I've got no problem with them bringing guys up from the practice squad. I have no issue whatsoever with that. This is essentially an extended training camp game. See what you have going into the offseason. See who is going to make an impact for your team next year, because you've got a lot to do going into the offseason. Now, talking about the offseason, this is very brief, because we will touch on this a lot next week when we kind of do a debrief and obituary for the season. But here's, to start with the negative, something that's going to make you feel a little bit of dread when it comes to the Redskins and their offseason. Their entire offense is going to need an overhaul next year. Aside from Trent Williams, Trace Ruhier, Brandon Scherff, and probably Morgan Moses because of his contract, everyone else could be on the chopping block. I don't think one offseason is going to be enough to fix this team's problems. They need multiple weapons on the outside. Jordan Reed, I don't know how much he has left in the tank. Vernon Davis is a nice backup tight end. I don't know how much he's going to have left in the tank. I think the only position you feel 100% confident in going into the offseason is the running back position, because you're bringing Darius Geis back. You still have Chris Thompson under contract. And I think that you could probably bring AP back, and that would make that position a very nice strength. But when you're talking about wide receiver, I don't think that Doxson's going to be back next year. Mo Harris hasn't really done much the second half of the season. Michael Floyd has just really been a stopgap. I mean, Paul Richardson will be back because he's under contract, but you need a playmaker there. You need somebody that can be a game breaker. They don't have that. I think at tight end, same deal. You have to decide internally what you think about Jordan Reed. You have to decide, do we think that he's got another great run in him, or is he pretty much played it out? On the internal offensive line, I mean, Brandon Scherff's an all-pro when he's healthy. He got banged up this year. He'll be back. Do you come back with Sean LaValle, or do you try to upgrade at that position? Morgan Moses is under contract. He's got a pretty decent-sized contract. He's had a lot of penalties. He's had a bad year. I think you can bank on him probably having somewhat of a comeback season. I don't think that you make an upgrade there, but I think you certainly want to look at making an upgrade to your backup offensive line, because clearly on this team, you're going to need to use your backup offensive lineman quite a bit. And then, of course, the quarterback situation. What do you do? Do you draft a guy? Do you sign a guy? Do you do both? All of these things are things to dread if you're going into the offseason. Kind of to piggyback off of that as well, Jerry Brewer came out with an article in the Washington Post this week talking about how the last four seasons, give or take, the Redskins have essentially, under the last 4 years under Jay Gruden, the Redskins have essentially created a 500 franchise. And in Jerry Brewer's estimation, and I would agree with this, I've been kind of touting this for the last few weeks, it hasn't been coaching. It's really been just a lack of playmakers. Their most explosive playmaker the last 2 years has been Chris Thompson. I don't think there's an argument to be said about that. He's been their most explosive playmaker. He can't stay healthy. And it's not a conditioning thing with him. His body is just, he can't take too much of a beating. So he can't stay healthy. And then you talk about the receivers. They don't create separation. And when Geis went down this year, they had no special running backs. AP, Hall of Famer. But he can't beat a team on his own anymore. Geis had that opportunity to be a game breaker, to be somebody. I mean, he's not Saquon Barkley. He could be a poor man Saquon Barkley. The Redskins have no playmakers, none whatsoever. They need to add at least one, if not two, playmakers to their offensive side of the football. Jay's had very little to work with offensively. Even when he had Kirk Cousins, who is an above average NFL quarterback, they had no playmakers ever since DeSean Jackson and Pierre Garçon left, and they need to find a way to add those. I don't think one offseason is going to be enough to fix this team's problems. They're going to have to get creative, and they're going to have to get a little bit lucky in the draft. You know, Tyreek Hills don't just fall off trees. They just don't. Neither do Odell Beckham Jr.'s, things of that nature, Julio Jones. So they're going to have to get creative. But you need at least one playmaker to add with Darius Geis to create something on offense that can make you, to make the defense fear you. And right now the Redskins just don't have it. Even with AP in the backfield, who broke 1,000 yards this season, has had a fine season for a 33-year-old running back. One of the best 33-year-old seasons ever. They need to do something. Bright spots from this season, I think that it's pretty simple, pretty easy to see. If you've been watching the Redskins, they have young building blocks along their defensive line. Allen, Payne, and Ioannidis, they're a legitimate force to be reckoned with up front. I like Ryan Anderson as a prospect in the middle of your linebacking core, along with Ryan Kerrigan, who continues to just be steady on the outside. I think those guys make their starting front seven formidable. I think Dunbar returning healthy next year will certainly help. And Fabian Moreau had a nice full year to get under his belt. I think he will be better coming into next season. But the Redskins do have some holes now. With DJ Swearinger gone, you have two safety spots to fill. I don't think you can count. Josh Norman is under contract, but I don't think that you can count on him. I don't think that you can count on Josh Norman to be a starting corner. He's not your, he hasn't been a lockdown corner all season. So I certainly think that if you can find a cornerback, I think you certainly have to go that route at some point. But the defense, you're going to need some linebacker help. It seems like Zach Brown has fallen out of favor. You got to wonder, are they going to let Preston Smith walk? There's a lot of questions going into their personnel decisions. And again, you still have the, $17 million cap hit from Alex Smith, which is going to hamper them next year because they still got to go out and get a quarterback of some sort. Unless they're going to go into the season with the Colt McCoy-Josh Johnson combination, I think they can do better than that, but they may decide to do otherwise. That's pretty much all I had to say about the Redskins. Again, I actually enjoyed the game Saturday. I enjoyed the game. I thought that they played their guts out. They showed that they came to play, and I don't think that they were out-coached. I think they had... I will say this, actually. The last thing I'll say about the game, I didn't understand the clock management when the Redskins had the ball and they were down 3, 19-16. I didn't understand the clock management. They basically let the clock run down to the two-minute warning. It looked like they were playing for a field goal. I don't get that. That's a minor thing because what happened was Josh Johnson throws the pick. You only have two timeouts, so essentially you get the ball back after stopping them on defense with, 20 seconds left? I didn't understand not being in more of a hurry-up, not having more urgency, because if the pick happened a minute earlier, you get the ball back with a minute 20 left, and then you still have an opportunity to get into field goal range. So I didn't understand that. That bothered me a little bit, but again, season's over. There's no sense looking back on that. I thought that they played a strong game. And it was fun to watch, actually. I thought that was fun to watch. Josh Johnson has been fun to watch. I'd like to see him play again Sunday against Philly to wrap up the season. I will remind everybody, as we hit the middle of the podcast, that we are associated with the DMVSportsNetwork.com. We're affiliated with. That is the DMVSportsNetwork.com. They can be reached on Twitter at DMV_SN. They've got great DC sports content. Please don't hesitate to look into them if you're interested in potentially hosting a podcast, writing articles on whether it's the Caps, the Nats, the Wizards, the Skins. Please reach out to them. They're always looking to add to their staff. So dmvsportsnetwork.com or at dmv_SN. You can also follow us on Twitter. It's About Time DC1. That is ITS About Time DC1. Please subscribe to our podcast. Share it with your friends. Rate us. Let us know what you think. We are always looking forward to hearing from you guys. Let's talk about baseball in general, but mainly the Washington Nationals. Nats made a signing this week. They signed Anibal Sanchez to a 2-year, $19 million deal. He essentially takes Tanner Roark's spot, the fourth spot in the rotation. Last season, he had a 2.83 ERA in 24 games started. He was 7-6, had a 2.6 WAR, pretty solid. He was 7-6. I said that already. 7-6 was his record. He threw 136 and two-thirds innings, had 135 strikeouts, and his WHIP was 1.083. Now, the thing to me that makes it this interesting, his 2018 was spectacular for the Braves. Spectacular. He made the transition back to the National League. Last time he had pitched in the National League was 2012 with Miami. Since then, he's been with Detroit. He's pitched, six seasons with Detroit. The curious thing is, prior to last year, now remember last year he had a 2.83 ERA. In the last three seasons with Detroit, 2015, 16, and 17, he had a 4.99 ERA, 5.87, and 6.41. So his ERA has consistently climbed over the last three seasons, while at the same time, his strikeouts have decreased. In 2015, he had 138 strikeouts, 2016, 135, and then in 17, 104. And his WHIP has been all over the place. 2015, 1.28, which is not very good. And then 16 and 17, he was over 1.4. 2017 was almost at 1.6 WHIP. He found himself again at the age of 34, in 2018 with the Braves. So you look at this one of two ways. You either look at this and you say, he has rediscovered himself at 34 years old, where he's not going to be blowing people away as much as he did when he was younger. He's also benefiting from being back in the National League. I think that it is a nice signing. He's a guy that's going to potentially eat up innings for you. There's very little pressure on him. He's your fourth starter. But if you ask me, do I like him better than I like Tanner Roark? I think my answer to that is, I don't know. I know Tanner has not had the best of seasons the last two seasons, but Tanner has been a rock when it comes to pitching a lot of innings. And actually, in 2018, his WAR was higher than Anibal Sanchez at 3.4. But Tanner, the last 2 years, his ERA, 4.34 and 4.67. But he's also thrown 181 innings in 2017 and 180 innings in 2018. Tanner has been consistent when it comes to eating up innings. Tanner is also 3 years younger. I think the deal here is Tanner had 1 year of arbitration left at $10 million. They get Anibal for 2 years at $19 million. So they essentially lock in their fourth starter at $9.5 million for the next 2 years, which is a shade under what Tanner was going to be this year. And Tanner most likely would have made more money hitting free agency going into the 2020 season. I kind of like it. I kind of don't. I really liked Tanner Roark. But Anibal, again, had a great year last year with Atlanta. Let's hope he can keep that going. Let's talk about Daniel Murphy real quick. Signing with the Rockies. The dude is going to rake in Colorado with his launch angle and his ability to get on base. He is going to hit in the low to mid-300s. He's probably going to eclipse 30 home runs. It's a great landing spot for him and a phenomenal signing for the Rockies. The Rockies are going to be in contention again. They had pretty decent pitching last year. They always have a decent offense. Daniel Murphy is a significant upgrade for them over DJ LeMahieu at second base, and he'll probably play a little bit of first base there. I really like the signing for the Rockies, and I also like it for Daniel Murphy. I believe he signed a two-year deal there. He's really going to pad his offensive stats there. Great job by the Rockies signing Daniel Murphy. Staying in the NL West, the Dodgers made a pretty big trade. I wouldn't call it a blockbuster, but a pretty big trade this week. They cleared some salary space and also some roster space. They traded Yasiel Puig, Matt Kemp, and Alex Wood to the Cincinnati Reds for Homer Bailey and prospects. And then immediately, the Dodgers released Homer Bailey. This essentially for the Dodgers was them taking Homer Bailey's dead contract that the Reds didn't want and basically paying that contract and also giving up legitimate major league pieces in Yasiel Puig, Matt Kemp, and Alex Wood. Doing that for prospects, but also to get them further under the luxury tax. And I believe that they're doing this potentially for one of two reasons, or for both reasons, actually. I think they could be in the hunt for Bryce Harper. It came out a week or so ago that they were only interested in Bryce on a short-term deal. I don't know if this changes their thinking in that regard, but they could certainly give him a higher short-term deal now because of the luxury tax situation. And I also think it clears roster space and space in their rotation if they want to revisit talks with Cleveland on either Trevor Bauer or Corey Kluber. Dodgers making some moves. They gave up some firepower to Cincinnati. Cincinnati's going to be a lot better this year. Cincinnati pitching-wise, they've added Alex Wood. They've added Tanner Roark to their offense. Yasiel Puig, Matt Kemp, among others. Cincinnati's going to be much improved. Puig has the potential, if he stays healthy and if he stays within himself, he has the potential to hit 40 home runs in Cincinnati. That ballpark, the Great American Ballpark in Cincinnati, is a bandbox. Matt Kemp had a nice comeback year last year for the LA Dodgers. I think that he's a nice addition there for the Reds. I think he has the potential in that ballpark to really rake. Last year, he hit 290, 21 home runs, 85 RBIs. Pretty solid for an outfielder. I think he's going to have a pretty good season in Cincinnati. And then you're talking about Alex Wood. Alex Wood, nice starter. Nice addition. Starters are always going to have problems in Cincinnati because of the ballpark. But last year, 3.68 ERA in 27 games started. Only threw 151 innings, though. Dave Roberts does not like to extend his pitchers much beyond the second time through the lineup. But I think he's a nice addition as well for Cincinnati. It'll be interesting to see what the Dodgers do with their newfound roster and salary space, whether it's Bryce Harper and Corey Kluber, or maybe they revisit Manny Machado, although I really don't think that they need another infielder. So I'll be curious to see what happens there. But an interesting trade. They did get some nice prospects, potentially take those prospects and flip them for Kluber or Bauer. Who knows? Let's go back to the Nats real quick. A question that's been kind of kicking around in my head, especially since they signed Anibal Sanchez. The question is, are the Nats done? I don't think they're done. I think they're probably done making big signings. I don't know how much roster, or I take that back, I don't know how much salary space they have left. They certainly have a couple small needs. They could probably use another reliever. Second base to me is definitely on their wish list, but it might not be plausible unless somebody becomes ridiculously cheap. And here's an idea my co-host Josh brought up. I really wanted him to, he's traveling this week, but I really wanted him to jump on to discuss it because he's very, very passionate about it. And I actually happen to think it's not a bad idea. And I will try to do the best I can to pitch it. I probably won't do it justice compared to what Josh can do, but he really likes the idea of the Nationals signing Troy Tulowitzki to a league minimum contract to play second base. Josh truly believes that Tulowitzki in the Nationals lineup batting probably somewhere around seventh could give you 265 with 25 home runs and 70 RBIs. That, it's high praise. Now look, Tulo's 34 years old. He has dealt with a ton of injuries. I mean, let's look at the number of games he's played in the last, let's say, six seasons. Not even six. Let's go back to 2012. 2012, he played 47 games. Came back, played 126 and 13, then 91 and 14. And then in 15, he played 128. 14, he played 41, 131 in 16, and then he only played 66 in 2017. He has not been consistent, has not been able to stay healthy and to be able to stay on the field. When he has been healthy, though, 16, when he played 131 games, he hit 24 home runs. In 2015, he hit 17 home runs in 128 games. And then in 13, when he played 126 games, he hit 25 home runs. Guy's got pop. But again, at 34 years old, excuse me, I don't know how healthy he can stay. But he's a career 290 hitter. He's played shortstop most of his career, so the transition to second base shouldn't be that hurtful. And he'd have very little pressure on him batting in the seventh hole, with most likely Kurt Suzuki or Yan Gomes hitting behind him. I like the idea. He's still being paid $20 million by the Blue Jays because they cut him, released him with time left on his contract. So you could get him for the league minimum. It would be a low-risk, high-reward deal for the Nationals. But again, I think the Nationals might be okay to start the season platooning Wilmer Defoe and Howie Kendrick, with the possibility of Carter Kieboom coming up at some point towards or after the All-Star break and taking over second base. I think another bullpen arm seems more likely for the Nationals when it comes to what signings they have left to do. I think their odds of trading for another starting pitcher, seem unlikely. Their starting rotation will most likely set up to be Scherzer, Strasburg, Corbin, and Sanchez, and then you're going to be seeing Fetty and Ross battling it out for the fourth and fifth starters. I don't see them either making another signing, definitely not. I don't know if they have that kind of contract space, but or making a trade for a Zach Greinke, Corey Kluber, Trevor Bauer, Madison Bumgarner. I just don't see it. They have the prospects for it, but I don't now, especially because they gave Anibal Sanchez $9.5 million a year for the next 2 years. I just don't see them having the salary space to bring on another arm like that. I just don't see it being possible. Unless the Learners decide to clear some money for 1 or 2 years, 1 year would be with like Bumgarner, 2 or 3 years would be with like Greinke, and saying, we're going to go for it. We're going to give an extra $20 or $30 million towards our salary expectations. We're going to go for it and really blow that window for the next 3 years wide open going for the World Series. But I don't see that being a possibility. I think that their fifth starter will most likely be an internal option. Eric Fetty and Joe Ross certainly are the headliners for that. Let's go to my final thought, and it is certainly not a positive one when it comes to the Redskins, but it is a thought that I had this week, and it's a thought that has been kicking around a bit in my head, and it kind of goes to the theory that whenever people talk about really bad NFL franchises, the first franchise that comes to their mind are the Cleveland Browns. And rightfully so. I mean, the Browns have been dismal since they've come back, since they were brought back into the league. They've been dismal, the number of starting quarterbacks they've had, the head coaching turnover, etc. But the Redskins are going to be closing out another playoffless season. They've had one 10-win season in the last, I think, 20-some-odd years. It's time to start saying that, as a Redskin fan, that the Redskins and the Browns are on the same playing field. And as a matter of fact, it appears that the Browns are trending in a better direction than the Skins. I know I've talked a lot about the Browns this year. And the only reason why, really, is because I made multiple bets that they would make the playoffs. And they're not going to make the playoffs. They won this week, but they're not going to make the playoffs. But they look like their future is set up very, very well. I don't think there's any question that Baker Mayfield is a professional quarterback. There's no question that Hugh Jackson was holding them back, and that since Greg Williams has taken over, they have really hit their stride. Cleveland is 7-7-1. They have the opportunity this weekend, if they win, and I believe they play Baltimore. If they beat Baltimore, which is, you know, not an easy task, but if they beat Baltimore, they have the opportunity to finish at 8-7-1 and have a winning record. The Redskins, to be honest, their future does not look as bright as the Cleveland Browns. And the Skins over the last 20-plus years have been one of the worst franchises in the NFL. This isn't changing anytime soon. And this isn't another thing where I'm rattling off and talking about Dan Snyder, Bruce Allen, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not going that route. I'm just saying, you know, the glory days, they're 30 years behind us. And it's time that we accept as Redskins fans that when people are shitting on the Browns, they may as well also be talking about the Redskins. I mean, we are as abysmal as the Browns are. And it soon may be, with Baker Mayfield joining the Browns and potentially the Browns becoming a team that could be a contender for the next several years because they have a franchise quarterback, it may soon be that the Redskins become the Browns. They already are the Browns. They're on par with the Browns. But it may soon become, when people talk about really poorly run franchises or really poor performing franchises, that they're going to say, man, imagine being a Washington fan. You know, like we talk about being a Cleveland fan, imagine being a Washington fan. So it's not a positive thing. I certainly want the Redskins to turn it around. We'll talk next week about what they should do going into the offseason, what they should do about the quarterback position, what players they should bring back, what they should do about their coaching staff. I think Josh was probably right last week when he said that Bruce Allen was safe. He's just too buddy-buddy with Dan Snyder, and things have not gone badly enough for Bruce Allen to leave, which is disappointing. But we'll see what happens. We're not far off from seeing what happens. I mean, what do they call it, Black Monday? That's a week from today. It's if Jay Gruden's going to be fired, it'll most likely be on New Year's Eve. If Minuski's going to be fired, it'll most likely be on New Year's Eve. And I think that if Bruce Allen is going to be fired, it'll most likely be that week, because they're going to want to get a new GM in here immediately so that that GM can decide whether to keep Jay Gruden or whether to go in a different direction. Redskins have a lot of decisions to make. They usually don't do the right thing when it comes to these decisions, so I'm not holding my breath that things are going to get better. But for now, we can at least look forward to the fact that the Redskins are probably going to start to be referenced as the worst franchise in football, because the Browns are ascending. Anyway, that's all I have for today. Reminder, dmvsportsnetwork.com. Check them out at @dmv_sn. Check us out on Twitter. It's About Time DC1, ITS, About Time DC1. Subscribe to our podcast, rate us, all that good stuff. Share us with your friends. Let us know what you think. And thank you guys, man, for all of you guys for listening. And hope you guys have a great Christmas, a great holiday. We will talk to you before the new year, but also a happy new year if we don't talk to you before then. Take care, guys. It's been great talking to you, and we will see you guys next week.